5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
In the early morning hours of January 6, 2023, 36-year-old Jason Marus was found unresponsive inside his vehicle parked in the lot of his Fort Lauderdale, Florida condo. The driver's side door was slightly open, and Jason was slumped over, covered in blood. He had been shot one time. Detectives later located surveillance footage showing a masked man walking in the area around the time of the murder, but he has never been identified. 3 years later, the case is still unsolved, and the question remains, who killed Jason Marus? Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, first of all, a little bit of house cleaning. As anybody who's watching on YouTube may have noticed, I am wearing a pair of the wired AirPods, the first ones, when I bought the original iPhone. Why? It's funny you ask. I actually recorded this episode the other day. Went great and got home and sent it off to Shannon. And then I received a phone call today, Valentine's Day, to let me know that the entire episode, including the ads, was recorded in a robot voice. Shannon, let's roll a little bit of that tape.
All right, so tonight, as you just heard in the trailer, we're going to be talking about the murder of Jason Marus. This is a mysterious case in the sense that on the surface, you don't think we have anything, and yet, as I mentioned, we have a video of the potential suspect.
So there it is. How does that happen? Well, usually, whether you notice it or not, I'm always wearing those in-ear headphones. And unfortunately, I've had them for like 4 or 5 years, and I use them for both Detective Perspective and Crime Weekly, and one of the sockets broke. And the only company that can fix it is the company that built them. So you have to send them out. They're currently being repaired. So I said, you know what? It does suck not being able to hear myself, not being able to monitor what I'm saying. But I think we can get away with it for one episode. So in that clip you just saw, I had no headphones in because I thought it was more aesthetically pleasing. Well, perfect storm happened. So here I am again, Saturday night, and you guys are my date for Valentine's Day. So I excuse the fact that I may not look my best and I'm wearing wired headphones, but I ain't risking it again. Sorry. So just wanted to put that out there. You know, I could have pushed this episode a few days. You know that ain't happening. We're getting it out there. So I'm going to record the whole thing again. If anything, it's going to be better because now I've had a chance to go over the whole script and kind of break down what I wanted to say. And I'm hoping it just kind of flows out of me again. And that's what we're going to talk about. Jason Maroos. This is an interesting case. We're going to talk about a few different theories, but in reality, as you saw in the teaser, this is really a bolo, a be on the lookout. We want to bring in new leads so that investigators can follow up on them. And what better way to do that than to provide you with as many facts as possible? And I'm happy to report that we actually had 6 people work with us for this episode, including Jason's mom, Debbie, and his best friend, Ted. So thank you to Debbie and Ted for working with us to make sure that we got everything correct and for allowing me to tell Jason's story. This is a case that's a little over 3 years old, and there's not a lot of movement in it. And I'm wondering why, because as you will see later in this episode, the video is pretty good. And I don't know what investigators have that they might not be sharing, but I'm assuming it's not a ton, or they would still be working it and they wouldn't be classifying it as a cold case. So what do we do? Do we just sit back and hope that something changes, or do we try to do something about it? And that's what Detective Perspective is, bringing attention to cases that you may not have heard of. And I can't tell you how many times I've received emails or saw comments on the video episodes where people from the areas that I'm talking about say, hey, I've lived here my whole life and I've never heard about this case. Thank you for sharing it. So that's what we're going to do here. I'm going to lay the entire case out for you. And at minimum, you're going to know Jason Maroos's name. But best case scenario, someone out there listens or watches this episode and something rings a bell and they remember seeing Jason or something in that area that night, and they provide that information and it gets the ball rolling again. So we do have a lot to cover. I don't want to waste any more time. Let's dive into this week's case. Jason William Maroos, who went by Jay to the people closest to him, was born on December 22nd, 1986 in Ohio to his parents Debbie and Chip. Jason was funny and had an infectious personality. He loved being around people, and he was known for being generous and dependable. Jason was the type of person you could talk to about anything, and he made each person in his life feel like they had a special connection with him. Jason came from a large, close-knit family, but the person he was closest to was his mom. Every single person we spoke to said the same thing. Debbie was Jason's favorite person. He would do anything to protect her. Jason and his two older brothers lived primarily with Debbie in the Cleveland, Ohio area. She and Chip divorced not long after Jason was born, and Debbie raised the boys as a single mother, working hard to provide for them. Even as a child, Jason was aware of how much she carried, so he always made sure to let her know how much he loved and appreciated her. Jason and his brothers also spent significant time with their father. They visited him on weekends and often went to work with him. Chip co-owned a construction company with his family, and eventually all 3 sons worked there. Jason started at the bottom, sweeping floors at job sites when he was still young, and over time he learned the trade from his father, uncle, and other relatives. He showed an early talent for carpentry and construction work, and he decided he wanted to turn that skill into a career. After high school, Jason attended community college to further develop his skills. He later graduated with an associate's degree in construction and went on to work full-time for the family company as an estimator and project manager. Around the same time he graduated college, Jason came out as gay to his family. He was immediately met by support from everyone. Debbie described the change she saw in her son, saying that once he came out, it was, quote, like a sunrise. He was just different after that. It was like a weight had been lifted. Roughly 5 years later, in 2014, Jason chose to move on from the family business and start building a career on his own terms. He had always dreamed of living near the ocean, so he packed up and moved to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Once in Florida, Jason continued working in construction, and he stayed close with Debbie and his best friend Ted back in Ohio, and they basically spoke every day. At the same time, Jason also built a new circle of friends and settled into his life. By January of 2023, Jason was living in the Middle River Terrace neighborhood of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, which had been ranked 7th out of 50 for the best neighborhoods for young professionals. He lived in a condo within the triplex, and there were two other neighbors in the same building, but each unit had its own private entrance and yard, and the parking area consisted of just 3 spaces right off the street. Now, I'm going to pull the map up here, but this was a first for me. I've never had this happen before on Google Maps. But as you will see, when you get closer to the end of the road near the gas station, you can see the date in the top left-hand corner, and it says 2024. But immediately, as you start going down Jason's road, the date starts going back to 2022 and then 2008. And when you compare what the street looks like in this map to some of the news archival footage that I also have clipped in here, where you can see Jason's mom, Debbie, in the area where Jason was living. You can see his apartment where it says 814. It's drastically different from the area on this map. So normally I would kind of break down the map and show you what we're looking at here, especially considering that I'm going to show you video later of the same area. But unfortunately, that's not possible. So clearly what happened here between 2008 and 2024, there was a rehabilitation of this area. They more than likely knocked down the old homes and replaced them with new houses, or they all just went under extreme renovations, because from what I can see, they're very different from what they were back in 2008. However, if anyone is from this area, and I'm completely off base here, please correct me in the comments and I'll pin it. But just based on what I'm seeing and from my research, that appears to be what happened. So unfortunately, we're not going to be able to dive into the map too much. However, you can get a global overview if you don't use Street View and still get a layout of what we're dealing with here. Now, let's go back to Jason, because I talked about how he was creating a new life down in Florida and he was building his new circle of friends. In addition to that, Jason was also dating a man named Anuj for about 5 months. And we were lucky enough to get to speak with Anuj for this episode, and he was able to walk us through the night of January 5th, 2023, including when he found Jason. We're going to talk about that right after the break. Cravings aren't just about nicotine, they're about habit. The hand-to-mouth motion, oral fixation, the momentary pause. When that loop is broken, cravings spike, and Fume replaces that habit with a flavored air fidget device that gives your hands and mouth something to do, distracting cravings without nicotine, vapor, or batteries. So don't just try to quit, upgrade that habit loop and reach for Fume instead. As I mentioned, Fume is the flavored air device designed to help people quit smoking or vaping by breaking the hand-to-mouth pattern. And again, no nicotine, no batteries, no vapor. Just clean, natural flavors and a fidget-friendly design that actually feels good to use. And I've mentioned it to you guys before. I have the Fume in my hand all the time at the office. I'm someone who likes to fidget, and I love the design and weight of the Fume device. It's real wood. It's real metal. You can hear the spinning, the clicking, right? It's got a magnet on it. I love it, and it tastes great as well. My personal favorite is the orange vanilla, but they also have crisp mint, which is a very popular flavor, and currently they have raspberry as well, which is delicious. And listen, I know we're getting into February, but we all know how resolutions go. Day one, it's easy, no problem. And then by like day five, you start negotiating with yourself, and then you eventually fall back into those old habits. But Fume helps you replace that motion and that routine without falling back into that old pattern. And if you've been thinking about trying Fume, now is a great time to do so. When you grab a journey pack, you'll also get a free gift just for using my code DETECTIVE. Fume has already helped over 700,000 people take steps toward better habits, and now it's your turn. So use my code DETECTIVE to get a free gift with your journey pack. All you have to do is head to tryfume.com, that's T-R-Y-F-U-M.com, and use my code DETECTIVE to claim your free gift today. Okay, we're back from break, and I want to dive into what Anuj had to say about the night in question. So on the night of January 5th, 2023, Jason and Anuj made plans to meet at a club. Anuj ended up running late, and by the time his Lyft dropped him off at the club around 1:30 a.m. on what was now January 6th, Jason had already left and gone home. Anuj texted Jason and asked him if he would pick him up at the club, and Jason agreed. And at 1:34 a.m., he said he'd be there in approximately 10 minutes. But Jason never showed up. And when Anuj tried calling and texting him again, he didn't get a response. Anuj said this immediately stood out to him because Jason was always on time and he always responded. So he waited about another 20 or 30 minutes before deciding to walk home. And as he walked, he continued trying to call and message Jason, but he still couldn't reach him. By 3:45 a.m., Anuj said he was beyond worried, so he ordered another Lyft and went to Jason's condo to check on him. When he arrived, he entered through the gated area that led directly to Jason's unit. He knocked on the door but didn't receive a response. But Anuj was aware that Jason kept a spare key hidden outside, so he used it to enter the condo, but Jason wasn't inside. Anuj said he didn't notice anything out of the ordinary, so he sent Jason a picture to let him know that he was there. Still, not hearing back after a few minutes, Anuj decided to leave. He locked the door and placed the spare key back where it belonged. As he was walking away, he ran into a neighbor who asked if he was looking for Jason, and Anuj said, "Yeah, that's why I'm here." And the neighbor proceeded to tell him that Jason appeared to have fallen asleep in his Ford Edge that was parked in the parking lot. After hearing this, Anuj went to the parking area and approached Jason's car. He noticed that the driver's side door was slightly ajar, and when he opened it, he found Jason inside. He was slumped to the right and unresponsive. Anuj said that he saw something on Jason that looked like vomit, but when he looked closer, he realized that it was blood. He then noticed a small wound on Jason's neck, and Anuj immediately became distraught and called 911. Fort Lauderdale police arrived at the scene at 4:05 a.m., and officers went straight to work on Jason, who was cool to the touch. He was pronounced dead shortly after. Officers interviewed Anuj at the scene, and he explained that he and Jason were dating and were supposed to meet at the club that night, but Jason never arrived. That's what led him to go check on him at the condo. And Anuj was completely forthcoming with police. You see, he also told them that he was married, but in an open relationship. He and his husband Praveen had been married for 10 years and had begun drifting apart. They decided to live separately and allow each other to see other people. Praveen lived in New Jersey, but visited Anuj in Florida every few months, staying for several weeks at a time. During those visits, he had met Jason and was aware that Jason and Anuj were seeing each other. According to Anuj, the only complication was that Praveen did not fully understand how serious the relationship between him and Jason had become. You see, they were allowed to date other people, but they were not supposed to fall in love. Anuj admitted that he and Jason had developed deeper feelings, and he had not always been honest with Praveen about how often they were spending time together. On the night of January 5th, Anuj said that he had picked a small fight with Praveen so that Praveen would go to bed early. After that, Anuj left to meet Jason at the club, but as I discussed earlier, by the time he arrived, Jason had already left. Anuj further told officers that after finding Jason and notifying 911, he actually called Praveen and asked him to come to the scene. He was obviously extremely upset, and he said he needed support. So while Anuj is speaking with police, Praveen arrives at the scene, and he's brought aside to speak with a separate officer, and his account does match Anuj's. He confirmed that they had an argument and that he went to bed, but he said he was not aware that Anuj had left to go meet up with Jason until he received a call from Anuj. Officers asked both men whether Jason had any enemies or recent conflicts, and they both said they were unaware of any issues. They described Jason as someone who did not create problems. Police also asked whether either of them owned firearms, and they both said no. So after providing their statements, they were allowed to leave. Anuj then contacted one of Jason's close friends in Fort Lauderdale, a man named Garrick, and asked him if he could reach out to Jason's family to let them know what had happened. After speaking with the family, Garrick went to the scene himself. Officers confirmed to him that Jason had been killed, and they asked him when he had last seen or spoken to Jason. So here's the interesting thing. Garrick told them that he had met Jason for dinner at around 7 p.m. on January 5th. About 2 hours later, they went to the bar, but Garrick said he did not stay long and was unsure what time Jason left, and he did not speak to him again after that. Garrick said that during dinner, Jason did mention feeling somewhat depressed, in part because of the complicated nature of his relationship with Anuj. He never said anything about having a feud or an issue with someone who might want to hurt him. So So as you might imagine, based on what I'm describing to you right now, from an investigator's point of view, you already have a pretty chaotic crime scene. Yes, you have a homicide. Your number one priority is to preserve that crime scene and make sure that any critical evidence is not disturbed. But then on top of that, you have multiple witnesses responding to the scene. And some of those witnesses could potentially be suspects. So on one hand, you're trying to preserve any potential evidence that could link to someone. On the other hand, you're trying to take good initial statements just in case it turns out that one of these individuals turned into a person of interest. You want to be able to go back to those initial statements and see if their story's changed. And so you have a lot going on here all at once, and it's all extremely critical to the overall investigation. And because you have all of this going on, detectives responded to the scene along with crime scene investigators to continue processing the area. After Jason's body was removed from the vehicle, investigators noted that his shirt collar had been disturbed as if there had been some kind of altercation. Another point worth noting is that there were also two wounds in the upper right shoulder area, but unfortunately, based on the reports that we have access to, it does not provide any further details about those injuries. And if you asked me one thing that I would like to have a little bit more of an understanding on, it would be these two injuries. But at this point, law enforcement has been tight-lipped. Investigators went on to search both Jason and his vehicle, and they located his wallet, iPhone, and Apple Watch. They also recovered a bullet from the roof of Jason's vehicle and a spent round on the floorboard beneath the driver's seat. Detectives were able to determine the caliber of the weapon, but that information has not been made public in order to protect the integrity of the investigation. And yes, I would obviously love to know the caliber of weapon. The more information, the better. However, what I did describe to you there, there's a lot we can talk about. There's a lot we can dissect. Let's first start off with the fact that Jason was still in possession of his wallet, iPhone, and Apple Watch, all things of value, and yet they're in his possession. Now, at first glance, you may be inclined to say because everything of value was still found in his possession, the motive clearly wasn't a robbery. I would push back on you and say, even though everything was still found on him, it doesn't mean that the original intention wasn't to take those items or something else. However, during a struggle or during whatever occurred, the suspect may have opted not to take anything, knowing that if anything of Jason's was found in his possession later, it would tie him back to the murder. I also think the location of where Jason was found is extremely critical when trying to determine whether this was a premeditated murder or a random act of violence. You see, really nobody outside of Anuj would have known that Jason would be in his car at that time in that location. So if someone had planned this for a couple days or a couple weeks, this would not have been the time or place. There's no way to predict this. This was an unforeseen circumstance where after getting home, Jason was contacted by Anuj and agreed to go pick him up. Again, only two people would have known that. Maybe three if you're going to explore the theory that somehow Praveen had access to Anuj's phone records. And we will dive into that later in the perspective. But overall, when you look at it on the surface and you think about the possibility that maybe someone was planning this all along, it's highly unlikely considering the circumstances surrounding Jason's murder prior to the incident. And just to go even deeper than that, think about where Jason was shot. He wasn't shot in the head. He wasn't shot in the chest. He was shot in the neck. If you're someone who's going there with the intention on killing Jason, that's not the location you're going to choose. You're going to execute him. You're going to make sure that you accomplish your goal, which is to kill him, and you're going to aim, more than likely, especially if you have the element of surprise, you're going to aim for the head if you're able to get that close in range. Or, at minimum, you're going to shoot him in the chest, and you're probably going to shoot him multiple times. You have one gunshot wound to the neck, which is highly suggestive of an altercation taking place and the firearm going off in the process. Now, let's transition to the profile of the suspect. Who are we looking for here? What was the motive? What type of individual are we dealing with? I think we can tell a lot by the ballistics. This was not a professional. This was not someone who was prepared for this moment. Why do I say that? The key piece of evidence I point to is the unspent bullet found on the roof of Jason's vehicle. Why is that so critical? In my experience, especially when there's gang situations, a lot of times gang members will carry a firearm around. And in many instances, they will not load the weapon. Basically, they'll load the magazine, but they won't rack around into the chamber because they usually just have it tucked in their waistband without a holster. And they're fearful that the weapon could accidentally discharge, shooting them in the leg or even, you know, somewhere worse. So what normally is going to happen if you're watching on YouTube right now is the suspect will pull the weapon from their waistband. They'll cant the weapon to the side. If they're right-handed, they will take their left hand and then rack the slide. And by racking the slide, one bullet will be stripped from the magazine and loaded into the chamber. And now the weapon's hot. It's ready to go. But sometimes the perpetrator will not remember that they already racked around before putting the gun in their waistband. And what will happen, and I've seen this at many crime scenes, will respond and will find one unspent round and four or five shell casings. And that immediately tells me that during that altercation, the perpetrator pulled the gun out, muscle memory kicked in, they racked around, not knowing one was already in there. And in the process of doing so, the unspent round shoots up into the air because the extraction port will always be on the right side. So you have the extraction ejection port. It'll be on the right side of the gun. They'll pull it back. That unspent round will shoot in the air and then land on the ground somewhere. So in this particular circumstance, talking about it regarding Jason, what I believe happened is during this altercation, the suspect pulled the gun out, or maybe he already had it out, forgot that it was loaded, muscle memory kicked in, he canted the gun to the side, racked around to load the gun, not knowing that it was already loaded. And when he did, the unspent round ejected from the firearm and landed on the roof of Jason's vehicle. He then proceeded to shoot Jason, and the second shell casing was on the floorboard of the vehicle. It's not rocket science. It totally makes sense. I know all of my investigators out there and all my part-time detectives probably thought the exact same thing when it happened. This is a very common trend to see, especially with someone who's not super familiar, super comfortable with a gun. So to me, yes, it lays out what happened, but it also tells me that one, this person was not prepared, probably didn't anticipate having to use their gun, and is definitely not a professional, because no professional is going to leave that unspent round behind. Because what could we find from that unspent round? Well, they have to load the weapon, right? And unless they're wearing gloves, they're going to load it with their hands and they're going to load multiple bullets. So you hope that that unspent bullet will have either DNA or a fingerprint on it. However, as I sit here right now, I don't know if that unspent bullet has been tested in those processes. If it had, and there was something to it, I think we would know by now. So that's my overall analysis of the scene. Although it is an open investigation and they haven't shared everything, they did provide a lot of information. And I do think it gives us some insight, not only into what happened, but also the type of person we're dealing with as far as the perpetrator is concerned. Before clearing the scene, detectives canvassed the surrounding area and spoke with neighbors. One neighbor reported hearing arguing outside, followed by sounds that he initially believed were fireworks. He also reported hearing a news cry out after discovering Jason. So this just adds to what we just talked about as far as there being some type of altercation which led to the shooting, and then that was followed by Anuj finding Jason. Detectives then attempted to locate surveillance footage in the area, but unfortunately there was only one camera at Jason's complex and it did not capture anything helpful. At this point, detectives believe that Jason's murder may have been random, possibly a robbery gone wrong. And according to what Debbie was told, nothing about the scene appeared to be targeted. This just reiterates what I just talked about with the crime scene, and although I agree with their initial assessment, we're not going to always focus on that. We still have to explore all scenarios. As the investigation continued, detectives worked to verify Anuja's account. They were able to quickly corroborate what he had told them through phone records and surveillance footage. So anybody out there who's saying, hey, you got to look a little deeper at Anuj, is what he's reporting accurate? It does appear, based on what we know, investigators were able to confirm exactly what he said. So because of that, I have to remove him as a possible person of interest because it appears that law enforcement did their due diligence, which you would expect, considering that Anuj was the person to find Jason. With few leads to work with, detectives continued searching for surveillance footage in the area surrounding Jason's condo. And they got lucky because eventually they located a single clip that appeared to be relevant and potentially captured Jason's killer. We're going to review that footage right after this break. Ever wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable? The temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep, and that's why I switched to Miracle Made sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused temperature-regulating fabric to help me sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. So if you're a hot sleeper, cold sleeper, it doesn't matter. These sheets will keep you in that comfort zone so you get a great night's rest. And thanks to their antibacterial silver technology, Miracle Made sheets stay cleaner and fresher up to 3 times longer than regular sheets. That means fewer odors, fewer wash cycles, and way less laundry. And the most important part, at least to me and I think many others, they have to be comfortable, right? It doesn't matter about the bells and whistles. If you don't like sleeping on them, you're not going to use them. I'm happy to let all of you know, these sheets are extremely comfortable. They feel just as good, if not better, than sheets I've slept on in 5-star hotels, but without the high price tag. So they're smooth, they're breathable, and they're very comfortable. All that hidden bacteria that you find in regular sheets can clog your pores and it can cause breakouts. Nobody wants any of that, but with Miracle Made's antibacterial design, it helps you sleep cleaner and clearer night after night. So upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest by going to trymiracle.com/detective to try Miracle Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%, and when you use my promo code detective, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free 3-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with their 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/detective at checkout. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. Do you own physical gold right now? If you don't, it's okay. Most people don't. But Acre Gold is changing that. Here's how it works. You pick a subscription that fits your budget, make small monthly payments, and once you've stacked enough, they'll ship beautifully designed 24-karat Swiss gold straight to your door. So it's not a number on your screen. It's not in an app. It's yours. So exit digital and own physical. And I know most of you are probably already aware of this, but gold prices are through the roof. In fact, gold is up 70% year over year, and experts say there's no sign of it slowing down. I know I don't talk about finances a lot on this channel, but I am someone who's very financially conscious, and I have a very diversified portfolio. I invest in everything, including gold and silver, because I see the value in having physical access to my assets at all times. And also, side note, I am a little bit of a collector. And what cooler thing to have than gold and silver bars? Like, it's pretty cool, and it's a conversation piece to have with people you trust. So if that's something you're looking to get into, now is the time to do it. So if you're looking to start your collection, Acre is the place to go. They've got subscribers who have been stacking for 6 years because once you start, you don't want to stop. Plus, they're always running free giveaways. In fact, right now, you can win 2 5-gram ancient collection gold bars. So start your subscription and enter today at getacregold.com, and Acre is spelled A-C-R-E. Once again, that's getacregold.com. All right, we're back, so let's talk about this footage. As you can see, it's black and white and lasts approximately 35 seconds. It shows a person walking calmly down the street, and it's believed that the individual is a dark-skinned male. He is wearing a cap, a light-colored long-sleeve top, and long pants. His face is mostly covered by what looks like a COVID-style mask, and he is also wearing sneakers that appear to have a reflective pattern. You can see here, there's not a ton to go off of, although I would argue that the footage is pretty clear compared to some other video footage we have in different cases. And I'm going to play it one more time because, yes, we can talk about the characteristics and the description of the suspect, but I want to talk about his behavior. So let's throw it up on the screen one more time. So as you can see here, this person is walking very slowly, very calmly down the road. And you can see the timestamp in the right-hand corner there being approximately 1:30 a.m. And as we zoom in here, I take two things from this behavior. One, because he's walking so slowly and so calmly, this is highly suggestive that this video was captured before Jason's murder, if this individual is involved. The second thing I would point out would be how he's constantly looking around. On one hand, you could say that he's just being cautious and making sure that he has situational awareness. On the other hand, you could say that he's casing the area and looking for potential items to steal or a person to get the drop on. The final thing I want to point out that wasn't mentioned in law enforcement's description is, as you scroll further into the video and we can see what appears to be a mask, I would also note, and I could be wrong on this, I want your opinions, what appears to be a beard. To me, it could be a braid coming out from his hat, but I think it's more likely scruff protruding from the side of the mask. That's just my opinion. You guys go through it. Let me know what you think. But if I had to guess, this person also has some type of scruffy beard that's being covered mostly by this COVID-style mask. And so based on what we know about the evidence at the crime scene and what may have led to Jason's murder and the behavior being displayed here, it's very possible that we're looking at the individual responsible for Jason's murder. And I'm not the only one who thinks that, because according to Debbie, detectives believe this person may be connected to Jason's murder for two primary reasons. First off, the timestamp on the footage closely aligns with the estimated time of death, and because the individual appears calm, like I just said a few minutes ago, investigators believe that the video may have been captured shortly before the shooting occurred. The second reason, which I also think is extremely critical, detectives did not observe any vehicles traveling on the road during the time frame surrounding Jason's murder. And because of that information, they had already theorized that the person responsible may have been on foot. And what we do know is that this guy was the only person captured on camera walking in the area during the window in which they believe Jason was killed. So after locating this footage, the police released this video to the public, and they identified the individual as a person of interest and asked for help in identifying him. Unfortunately, as of this recording, that man has never been identified. And I think that's extremely telling, because more than likely, this person in the video has seen it, especially if they're from that area. And the fact that they haven't came forward and said, oh, wait a second, that's me. I was walking to my buddy's house, or I was walking from my girlfriend's spot, or I was coming from the bar and I didn't want to drive because I had a couple of drinks. The fact that it's been 3+ years and they've never come forward, I think the reason for that is deliberate and not unintentional. Unfortunately, that 35-second clip remains the only additional piece of evidence that detectives have ever publicly shared. And months passed without new information, leaving Jason's loved ones with more questions than answers. And by January of 2024, one full year had gone by. Debbie spoke with the media in hopes of generating renewed attention, and she told 7 News, quote, "I'm hurt and angry they did that to an innocent boy. I'd rather it be me. I lived my life. He was innocent. He wasn't doing anything, just sitting in his car." Jason's best friend Ted also spoke out, saying, quote, "There's no reason for him to be brutally killed like that, but to not have answers, it makes it so much worse." By the 2-year mark, detectives informed Debbie that Jason's case was considered cold. Jason's vehicle was sold at auction, and his personal belongings, including his phone, were returned to her. Debbie felt like the process was moving too quickly. To her, it seemed like the investigation was losing momentum. She said she hit rock bottom at the thought that her beloved son's murder might never be solved. One thing that Debbie told us was that after Jason's belongings were returned, she went through his phone, and she said that she could see that he had been texting right before or possibly at the time he was shot. And so that again aligns with what we're talking about here. If the person in the video that we're seeing is responsible for this, he was looking for something that would be easy to take or a victim of opportunity. So if he's walking down the road and he sees Jason sitting in his car looking at his phone, that would be someone easy to get the drop on. So what Debbie is deducing here, it makes a lot of sense, especially based on the evidence we have. And based on everything that Debbie learned, she has developed her own theory about what had happened. She believes that Jason was likely sitting in the vehicle, texting and preparing to leave to pick up Anuj when the gunman approached the car, opened the driver's side door, and demanded something from Jason. And Debbie said that based on what she knows about Jason, he would have absolutely refused to hand anything over, and that could have led to a struggle, one where Jason fought back. And again, Debbie, I'm completely on board with you. Your theory, in my opinion, is very sound. However, just like all of us in this case, including law enforcement, Debbie doesn't know whether the shooting happened during a struggle or was intentional. What she does know is that her son was killed and her family still does not have the answers they need. January 2026 marked 3 years since Jason's murder. Police have stated that the case remains open, but at this time, there are no active leads. Debbie and Jason's loved ones are desperate for any information that will solve his murder. They know someone out there knows what happened, and they need them to come forward. Until that happens, they will keep fighting for Jason, because they know he would have done the same for them. All right, so let's dive into the perspective, and this isn't going to be a long one. This is more about exploring a couple theories, maybe some things that can be done if they haven't already, and most importantly, getting this case out to as many people as possible, including the video. I have no doubt in my mind that there are going to be people who see this for the first time, and those are the people we're trying to reach. So let's start with theories and, I guess, potential persons of interest. And I'm not going to go too specific, but we do have to explore the possibility that there was someone in Jason's life who had a problem with him, who had an axe to grind. This could have been someone like a Praveen, right? I didn't talk too much about how his alibi was vetted, and that's because I don't know what was done. I have to assume, based on the dynamics of the relationship between Praveen, Jason, and Anuj, this was explored deeply. This was something that was extensively checked into to make sure that Praveen, who would have had a motive, wasn't out there waiting at Jason's home when he arrived or when he decided to leave. That would be number one. That's Detective 101. So I have to assume that's been explored and been thoroughly vetted. But there could be somebody else. I haven't talked about every single person in Jason's life. And was there someone else out there who had an issue with Jason or the choices he was making? Just like any of us, we don't know if everybody likes what we're doing. And this might have been an issue that he wasn't even aware of. Someone out there who had a problem with him and he didn't even know it. You think about people like Garrick, and I'm not accusing Garrick of anything, but Garrick was out at dinner with him. Was there something said that pissed a Garrick off or someone like a Garrick off? Always possible. Do I think that's what happened? No, I'm not going to just say it to say it. I don't think that's the case here. But regardless of what I believe, it doesn't matter. You still have to explore it like it's a real possibility to rule those theories out one by one. You also have to look into the possibility that it may not be as deep as someone who he had a personal connection with. It could be more surface level. Is it a colleague? Is it an acquaintance? Is it someone that he met at the club or in the parking lot while walking to his car? Is it a potential road rage incident? All of these theories, regardless of how unlikely they may be, you have to look into them and you have to fully vet them. If you've done all of that and there are no leads and it doesn't appear that any of those theories are viable, then yes, you go to the evidence. And as I said in the episode, what does it tell us? More than likely, this was a robbery gone wrong. Jason was out at his vehicle at a random time of night getting ready to leave. And unfortunately, he encountered the wrong person who happened to be in the exact place at the exact time. And Jason, being the person that we have come to know him to be, was a fighter. And this suspect chose the wrong person. Because instead of just handing everything over, Jason decided to fight back. And unfortunately, it cost him his life. All the evidence that we have, all the forensics that we are aware of, points in that direction. That this was an altercation that escalated by someone who was a novice with a firearm, and either it was an intentional shooting or it was an accidental discharge while fighting over the firearm. Either way, it's murder. And so if that's the case, what can we do? Well, first off, you want to look at other crimes in that area before and after Jason's murder. are there individuals who have already been identified for similar crimes where they used a firearm during a robbery and potentially fit the description of the person we see in this video? And this is a continuous process, right? This isn't just something that happens at the time. The detective in charge of this case has to constantly look for suspects who match the MO in Jason's murder. And when they do, you pull them in, you talk to them, you see if they have any information that can help. It's tedious, it's monotonous, but it's necessary. In addition to that, you also have to look at the forensic evidence. We know we have a bullet. We also have a spent shell casing. Have those two items been processed for DNA and fingerprints? If an investigator working this case is watching or listening right now and that hasn't been done, it needs to. And if there's a financial constraint there, you can always reach out to me. I would be glad to provide assistance. I will say, more than likely, that has already been done. And if it has, and we don't have any answers as of yet, it may have led to a dead end. So what do we do? Do we just sit back and hope for something to happen? Or do we go out there and find the information we need? I'm going with the latter. And I need your help. I need someone out there to come forward and do the right thing, because I agree with Debbie and the rest of the family. Someone out there knows what happened, more than just the person on video. If you watch that video and you've encountered this person before, or you know them personally, you're going to know that walk. You're going to know that look. And you're going to immediately be able to help in this case just by coming forward, even if it's anonymously. So just to recap, 36-year-old Jason Maroos was found shot and killed inside his vehicle in the early morning hours of January 6, 2023, outside his condo in the Middle River Terrace neighborhood of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Detectives recovered ballistic evidence and later released surveillance footage of a person of interest walking in the area around the time of the murder, and that individual has not been identified. If you recognize the person in the video or have any information regarding Jason's murder, you can call the Broward County Crime Stoppers at 954-493-TIPS or visit browardcrimestoppers.org. A reward is available. As always, my final words go out to the friends and family of Jason, specifically Debbie. Thank you for allowing me to tell your son's story. I hope I did it justice, and I don't want to just be a storyteller. I'm part of this now as well, and so is this community. We're all hoping that you get the justice that you deserve and that ultimately Jason deserves. And this is a case where you have more evidence than many of the cases I cover, which gives me hope. It gives me hope that really all we're missing is one person to do the right thing. And I'm hoping that by sharing Jason's story, we get there sooner than later, that this is what puts it over the edge and finally someone comes forward and does the right thing. And I hope I get the opportunity to sit here with all of you and let you know that the person responsible for what happened to Jason is now in custody. Until then, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.